Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Today, we have a very interesting guest. We have One True Purple from the community, whom I'm sure many of you already know.
He is sort of an unofficial Quake historian on Funk Message Board and the Quake Mapping Discord and elsewhere. And we're going to hear a little bit about one of his furry companions.
We'll also hear about how he bit off more than he could chew with one of his more questionable maps.
Yeah, his mapping is always challenging and often bizarre, so we're going to hear a little bit more about that. And he's also been handed the mantle of the Quake underscore text Twitter feed, which is always interesting and often hysterical. So without further ado, let's meet OTP.
OTP, yeah, you know me.
I think I was 9 years old, so quite, you know, a tender age to playing such a brutal game, but it was like I got my first PC, like a professional computer, in the year 2000, and after that, somehow we got this CD with Quake and Quake 2 at the time, so it was like not exactly legally acquired, but we got it, and I was a bit too young to actually get a grasp on anything, like the keys and mouse and stuff, so it would be just me watching my 13-year-old sister playing, so another great age for a game like this. And I think that's basically it. The way that I've heard something about Quake before, I don't really remember, but somebody told me it's a really scary game, so I was like, my expectations were already very high, like, what could this be? It's a kind of amazing horror thing. So, right. And well, we can get to that later, because there's a story about that, and even though I was still very young, and basically I wasn't the one playing, so it made quite an impression on me. So then I was growing up and getting interested in some other things, but there was always this feeling that maybe I should get into Quake sometime or something. So from time to time, I would like maybe Google it and see some stuff on the internet. And then I found Planet Quake and the Map of the Week reviews that were done by no one else but Shambler. And I was like amazed that they got so many amazing maps all this time, so I just made me really interested in checking them out. But again, I was obviously a teenager, so it took me a while to actually understand why is my Quake running. So it took until about 2007 until actually I got interested in Quake full time and I joined Funk Message Board. Well, joined. It took me a year to join because, you know, there's this performance anxiety on this forum, like, you're trying to post something and, oh, what do they think of me? I don't know. I shouldn't. And it's been
that,
like
that seems 10 like
years
that mentality's
now.
Kind of gone out of the window, though, because
You got over that eventually.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your inner, your role in the community, because you had said that you are more conservative and more of a purist on Quake than many Quake dads, which I kind of cracked up because I know you fairly well and some of the other things. But I will say that you're very much the, in my opinion, and we've had this conversation, that you're kind of the Quake historian. You have a great recall, or you're very quick at researching things, or you have logs, or I don't know how you do it, but you always seem to have answers, and they're historically accurate answers. So like, who did this map, or, you know, when did that engine come out, or what engine feature is that, you know, where did that come from? So I have a ton of questions for you, but so now why is it that you fit into that role as kind of a historian for Quake?
Well, I don't know, actually. It was like, I really wish that my brain could store some more useful knowledge that is Quake trivia about maps and utilities and stuff. Maybe I would do something useful in life with that. But, well, the thing is, actually, I was asked about this by Distrans a couple years ago. Like, are you a historian or something? Because you always get some answers to everything. It's just exactly what you said. And I said, no, but my dad used to teach history at a school, so maybe I got something from him. Maybe that's kind of power of recall, how you say it. And I don't know, I always got a big big part of my brain for trivia or something, like all the most useless things. And also being online helps a lot, so just checking my phone, somebody needs help, ah, do this, and I don't know. I wish I had a specific answer for you, to be honest.
Well, I always actually appreciate when you join the Quake Grape streams, because I retain information, you know, like a goldfish. So basically, whenever I ask a question and you're there, you're basically like, oh, yeah, that's this. And I was like, oh, thanks, OTP. You know, exactly. You always have the answer.
Exactly. I laughed at the goldfish brain, not because it's true, but because I share the same issue. You know,
it's also true, though,
being the elder statesman on the show, at least. Well, that's cool. So here we need to use your depth of knowledge here. And I want this may not go in the direction that we intended for this interview, but I just very quickly, I want to touch on the difference between speed maps and jams, because out of everybody, you really usually have a good answer for new mappers. Like, well, we're going to do a jam or a speed map. Let's put it to rest right here. What's the difference between speed mapping and jams? And by the way, you're working on a speed map probably as we speak right now, correct?
Well, I was really hoping to say that I'm wrapping up my entry on speedmap 193, but it's not even close to complete right now. Anyway, shame. Anyway, I don't know if it's going to settle anything in just one guy's opinion on something, so you can take it with a grain of salt or a grain of nothing, if you prefer. So basically, the way I say it is that we used to have speed maps for a very, very long time, but there was a pack that didn't really go well, like there was some kind of problems with the organization and the feedback, so Sock was involved in that, so he decided to make Quake map jams for some reason. Well, it was a great idea, as we all realized. And basically, it was turning this old concept of... We also had turtle maps before, so... And there used to kind of be a divide between speed maps and turtle maps, where speed maps could be a bit like... They used to take 100 minutes at the very beginning. Wow. And then evolved to a couple hours, then a couple days, then maybe 5 days or something. And there was also this concept of a turtle map, which I don't really know whether it was 1 week or 2 weeks, but it was basically this kind of a longer period to make a map. And the thing is, once by the time jams happened, we already had Trenchbomb, we already had Eric W tools, so the quality of a map that you could make in a limited time frame, it radically increased. So basically, turtle maps were dead. So there was still this divide between speed maps and jams. And I used to have it written down somewhere that it's not really about how many time it takes to make a map, whether it's a speed map or a jam, because there have been short jams and very long speed maps. So for me, it's about this kind of approach you do. Like, you know, Facebook used to have this kind of approach to business, like you move fast and you break things. And that's kind of, you know, that's my approach to speed mapping in general. Like, just make a really quick concept. Don't really worry about too much the quality. Just wrap it up and release, and just to have you kind of a notch on your belt, so to speak. And whereas with jams, there is like this kind of quality expected from the get-go because of how well jam one went down, thanks to Skaki, who basically made a map that was so good, and it was only 3 weeks. So you can thank him for everything that happened.
And that bastard.
Yeah. Ruined Quake mapping for everyone.
But see, you know, you kind of are being humble about that, but that's a great explanation. I mean, that even opened my eyes to a couple of things I didn't know about as far as jams being more recent and all that stuff. Because, you know, you read these posts on Funk Message Board and then you don't really notice the timestamp. But I learned something today. So now this comes up from time to time. Tell us about Remake Quake, because I just see that I've never tried it. I know that was a demo, but you seem to know quite a bit about Remake Quake, and I know that you were a tester for it. And without getting too into the interpersonal stuff, maybe you could kind of just give us a little background on that, and what, because it seemed like a really ambitious project. And I've certainly rated the source code for my projects.
Well, sure. Well, I think all the personal stuff is like very long ago. water under the bridge, so I'm not going to even go there because nobody cares is one thing, and two, I think nobody is going to be offended by anything. And basically what it was is that when I got into the community, I was a big fan of iJet's Warp Spasm Pack, which was this episode for Quarth, and it had some of the biggest maps at the time. Like, all of them fit in within the 180-something box of the maximum space, but the way they were built, the biggest one, it takes you up to maybe 2.5 hours to fully beat, like in one sitting. So
wow.
They really are kind of like Quake marathons in a way. And it made a really big impression on me because, again, it was one of the very first packs I downloaded and played. So that kind of informed my taste for everything else. And basically, the way I saw it is that, what I saw is that iJet was the iJet's next project was a remake of Episode 3 for Quake, which was with his own custom procs and his own story and everything. And that was around 2008. And around that time, there was also this person, Golden Boy, aka JB, who was also doing the same thing for Episode 1. And at some point, they decided to join forces. So that's how Remake Quake was born. And I was really excited about that because, you know, only thing I love about Quake, except made like warp spam, so it's gonna be amazing. So after some, let's say, courting iJet over emails, I got into the team as a tester because back then I couldn't even do anything, no mapping, no anything. So that was kind of my role at the beginning. I was just going through every map and leaving like all these pages and pages of feedback about it. And to my surprise, it was actually well received. Like, I actually can't agree with what you said. So it turned out that maybe it could be, and what I'm trying to say. Well, even though this.
Well, you had different valuable input into the process, obviously.
Well, some could say it was, but eventually there came to a time to a few demos on Funkmaster board, and it wasn't as warmly received as people expected, anybody. And the thing is, over time it became kind of maybe this inverse reaction that the more people complained about how far is Trace from Quake, like the further is Trace from Quake in some ways. So the first release was maybe close to Quake, then the second one was a bit off kilter, and the third was just, I was already out of the team by the time, but the third was just completely like off the wall insanity in some ways.
Interesting. Yeah, I've got to fire that up because I've never tried it, and sounds like there's more releases than
it's
I even
really
thought.
It's really interesting, I guess. If you play them one by one, you can actually see, like, you can graph it out how far it actually strays over time. And there were some problems internally on the team because, you know, there always were a project of this scale. There was about 10 or 15 people at some point, including me, iJet, GB, somebody else doing Episode 4. I don't remember who. I'm very sorry. There was RJ doing Episode 2, who once did the Episode 2 and 5 remix on Quake Funkmaster board. And our head of coding was Supa, I think that's how we say her name. She's known as Lady Havoc for obvious reasons. But over time, people started to quit for some reasons. I decided that I don't like the way project is going, the direction it wasn't for me, so I also quit. And over time, the project split into two ways. So Remake Quake was no more, and there was iJet's project, which was called Schism, and also Golden Boy's project, which became its own game on Unreal Engine 4. It's still running to the day. It's called Scout's Journey. You can Google it. You can probably leave it. It's doing some great work, but it's as far away from Quake as you can imagine. So the graph just keeps getting
blown. Well, yeah, I've come across Scout's Journey, so that's not surprising. But are you telling me it's still being worked on now, after all these years?
In a way, probably, yeah. It's not, well, it has nothing to do with Quake anymore, but it is kind of this.
Of course,
yeah. Legacy of a project.
It uses the same technology. It uses a similar technology
anymore,
and
really.
Similar approach.
I don't
obviously.
Think so. It,
oh, really?
It used to, oh, well, the thing is, it used to, like how I said it from the approach, like it used to be targeted for anybody's engine. Then we decided to create our own engine, which became RMQ engine, like a fork of FitzQuake, and that's where protocol 99999, and that's where it originates, like the big maps and everything like that. That's thanks to Remake Quake, also ESP2. Mm. That was one of the things I really disliked, because you shouldn't need a big map format to a remake episode 1. It's more my opinion, like maybe something's going wrong if you need that, but whatever. So it was this kind of, the way I said it was this kind of bitter process that resulted in many good things for the community, but eventually had nothing to show for itself. It's a bit bittersweet because there was a lot of work put into it that never actually saw the light of the day, maybe some of it. Like, I know RJ made a lot of maps, like he retextured his E2M5 back to a more of this blue wizard man's theme. And he also made a From the Ground Up Episode 2 Map 6 remake, which is absolutely amazing. Like, just fired up from day to day. And also still all of Episode 3 by iJot, which is also abandoned at this point, which is kind of sad because I really liked it. But, you know, que sera, sera.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool. No, man. Hey, well, I'm glad I asked because now I know more about that as well. I believe there's a side scroller that you like.
Oh.
It has a little mammal in it.
Well, actually, one of my second games growing up was a slightly less brutal game called Just the Crabbit 2. Made by Epic Games at the time. Well, basically, it was a funny thing. It was released about the same month as the first Unreal. So it's a game from that time. And it's a funny thing because when they were making it in 96, 97, they ended up with something that I don't think they anticipated to make. Like, it was Cliff Bezinski and Arian Brochet on the team, like the original Epic crew, and I think what they wanted to make was something funny to play, and instead they got this like 2D arena shooter that still played to the day. It's amazing, like it's incredible actually that it's so fast paced. It's like it's almost like second dimensional Alien vs Predator. The way you can play it, all the kind of different maps and approaches and weapons is like, I'm not surprised it's alive until 20 years later because it came out in 98 and there's still a community. It's no, as communities go, it's still shrinking every day because that's how communities for old games go. But if you compare it to something like, I don't know, other games from that time, like the Captain Claw thing, that one's been dead for decades. And meanwhile, it just keeps going. And as to my rule about it, is just somehow I don't know, there's this big website about it, like kind of like quadicted for people's maps and stuff. I happen to actually, I used to run it for a long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, the things you find out about like OTP here, you know.
No kidding. He's got a lot of skeletons in the closet. In
Little green furry skeletons. Right. So wait a minute. So there's a multiplayer scene for Jazz Jackrabbit 2. Is that what you're saying here?
There is, and it's doing pretty well.
I would have never That's thought.
Awesome. That is awesome. So
do they constantly debate like what's better, you know, Jazz Jackrabbit or Commander Keen? They go back and forth on that kind of thing.
No, there's no discussion there. Keen sucks.
I mean, I love platformers. I mean, I know RC plays a hell of a lot more than I do, but I've never played Jazz Jackrabbit 2, so I'm ashamed to even admit that. But I'm sitting here watching a little YouTube video of it, and I'm like, oh my God, I got to get this thing. But I'd be so intimidated. I'd be so intimidated by multiplayer. Should. No way would I play multiplayer.
It is actually top-notch, the soundtrack and everything, and the graphics, despite being low resolution, is that over time people actually started making their own graphics, including myself, and one of the, you know, the graphics for that game come in like tile sets, like you have this image like of every tile is like 32 pixels a square, and they come like these big sheets of tiles, and one of them I did is like I used graphics from the Quake Retextured project and made it kind of this big factory setting, and it got a lot of views. I didn't anticipate that. If actually, not to toot my own horn too much, but if you go to justonline.com and sort by rating, it's somewhere in the top 10. I'm like, and nobody, And I admitted to it, but not everybody thinks, wow, you did such a good job drawing, but no, I stole almost everything for it.
Well, here's the thing I'm seeing on the game is that it has like something from every major side scroller, because you have almost a Metroid type of thing. You've got plenty of aspects from Mario, the different Mario world.
Actually, it steals a lot.
It has Sonic as well. It looks like Sonic.
Inspiration from other games, like it's basically the hodgepodge of 90s platformers. Mm-hmm. There used to be a big discussion about how much art was actually influenced by others, and there's actually a lot of it was taken from Lion King and the Aladdin game, and also other services. It's like at some point you realize that there's actually very little in this game that's original.
That's funny you say Aladdin, because I didn't even think of that, and I'm like, yeah, actually, what I'm seeing here, that's funny.
Yeah, in terms of
one of my favorite things about the Jazz Jackrabbit stuff is that if you look at Cliffy B's work from this until now, I think he's incapable of making a game where someone doesn't have a gun and, you know, like a holster and uses bullets and everything like that. It just makes me laugh. He makes like one of the cutest characters you could see, and he still has a gun, which is great.
You know, the funny thing is that in 2017, the games were released on good.games, like gov.com, and he posted on Twitter how Epic sent him a check for royalties for still having made Jazz Jackrabbit all that years ago for Epic. So wow. The joke is that he made all these games that didn't work out, like Lawbreakers, Radical Heights, and this Jazz Jackrabbit that actually turned in a profit for him instead of those two.
And
so after all this time, he spent like, no, I've moved on, I don't want to do Jazz Jackrabbit anymore. So that's kind of this karmatic return, like, hey, no, maybe if you did just free at some point, you would still have some, you know, more of a money stream, so to say. He's not very, very respected in the community for that reason, because every interview is like, yeah, I love jazz, but then on the second interview is like, no, stop asking me, I don't want to talk about this. So it's kind of this big swing, however he feels between the day, I don't know. Well, things happen. Yeah, so anyway, what...
Well, as they say in showbiz, life is long. You know? Yeah. Never say never. Like Madea, I saw Tyler Perry said, I'm never doing another Madea. And then he's like, wait, I can't say never. You know,
right, totally.
So you never say never. Maybe there will be another remake Quake soon.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
We'll see. We'll see about that.
So anyway, if I wanted to continue that thought, is like I kind of like gravitated from this community to the other, like between this Jazz Jackrabbit and Quake. So at some time it started to intertwine a bit, but never to a really great aspect, actually. So it's actually kind of weird, because I really tried hard to keep those parts separate, because I thought if somebody at Funk Message Board finds this, they're gonna all laugh at me really hard. So I never really admitted to anybody before. And I'm just thinking, actually, who cares? It's okay now.
did I reveal a deep, dark secret? I'm so sorry.
You might have, yeah.
That's okay.
I think if people
give more royalties to Cliffy B, then it'll be worth it. Maybe you'll get Jazz Jackrabbit 3. But it'll be in the Unreal Engine, and it'll be all glossy, and it'll be horrible.
It'll be a 3D platformer. Yeah,
exactly.
It'll be Gears of War, but Jazz Jackrabbit.
Right, exactly. It's a cover shooter. That would be funny, actually. That would actually be really funny to see Jazz Jackrabbit like that.
Let's make it happen.
Exactly. Now, one of my favorite things about you is that you share the same disdain for dark places. And I'm halfway joking, by the way. You share the same disdain for dark places as I do. And, you know, dark places is coming kind of back to the forefront with Quake 1.5 and all that.
So
give me some good technical juicy reasons, because you always seem to come up with these nuggets of information that I'm like, wait, I've never read that anywhere. And then sure enough, it's true. So tell me some real technical reasons why Dark Places is not to your liking.
Well, if you want to get technical, there's this thing that what FitzQuake does, and actually what QuakeSpans and MarkV do after it, is that it loads maps 4 times faster than any engine. So if you try to load a map in QuakeSpans, it will go like snappy, like tick is loaded. And if you do it in dark phase, it's gonna be so slow. Like, I already lose my patience by the time the console's been rolling, so that's one thing.
Okay.
Well, as for technical, I think that's really it, because it's a matter of preference. It does many things that actually take Quake back from what it was. Like, you actually have to put some input in, like, effort into making it look more close to the original, which to me is a bit mind-boggling. Well, that's actually, that's how it was when I last played. Maybe it changed, but it was years ago, so I don't really know. But basically, it was like the particles were wrong. Like, if you fight a rocket, the sparks that came after it will actually fade to full black, so it looked like those pixels on your screen. That's really weird shit to me. Sorry about that.
That's all right. We'll beep you.
Just honk it out.
Well, you know,
honk it out. I feel a new song coming out.
Honk that. Oh, God, here we go.
That's another thing, actually, that internally it changes a lot of things. So it used to be like that if you play a curve map and you try to climb a ladder, it wouldn't work because how it interprets the ladder code somehow, like, it would account that you're not inside the sprite or something. That would be really some kind of the thing you would expect to work, like, wouldn't even work or something. And there was this time where it introduced a lot of, like, so-called gameplay fixes that everybody, like, around 2012 would say in Redis, in dark places, turn this to zero, set this to zero, set this to zero. So it was a funny time when it was in active use. Well, actually,
I think one of... Oh, go ahead.
There is actually, I'm not really a coder guy, so I can't really get into all this technical detail, but it actually is, it's not a mapper-friendly or a modder-friendly engine. Maybe modder-friendly, but, you know, I wouldn't play a Quake map in dark phase until somebody put a gun to my head and told me how to do it. Really. And actually, the thing I really...
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, what I really like is, like, what irks me about it the most is, like, this gateway into all this terrible HD content, like, all this, like, bump map. I want to say textures almost came off testicles. I'm sorry, it was this unfortunate slip. Well, basically, like I said, it's kind of this gateway into all this terrible, horrible content, like textures that and bigger models and stuff, all these things that are completely out of place. Like, you play a map maybe in 96 on a terrible machine, not sure, well, in terrible tools, you know, what Romero had to work with, and then you apply all this artwork, so to say, because it's not even close to art, but, you know, and basically it just looks like a big mess. And I think whenever you see a screenshot with all these textures, like, somebody went to the effort to retexture an entire map and looks terrible by the end, it's basically because Dark Places was a, like, you know, gateway drug, so to say.
a psychedelic gateway drug.
Sure.
Well, you know, I think it's fair to say that Dark Places is a game engine and a platform that you could make some great content when we're going to see some of that pretty soon with this 3D Realms deal. But
sure.
And so I think that's fair to say. And
so, by the time we have this interview out, the trailer should be out, so I'm hearing.
Cool. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, let's hope. That'd be awesome.
There's definitely indications of that. But so, I mean... Yeah,
so you should prepare for this episode to be the least listened to ever, because everybody's going to be watching the trailer instead.
Yeah, exactly. God, look at Dark Places is awesome. What the hell are they talking about? But So, I mean, as a platform, if you're going to go away from Quake and do your own thing, I completely see the allure of it for, you know, and this, again, this is my opinion. I'm not right or wrong, but it is a matter of taste. But I think just from the mapping perspective, just a couple of the things that went wrong for me kind of soured me on it. But also the same thing, like some of the particle effects. I was like, well, why did the blood looks weird? And why does this? So
it's almost invisible, right? Like really small particles or something.
Yeah. So anyway, so I hate Dark Places for Quake. Let's put it that way. I think just that's my personal opinion.
True.
So as a platform, and so it kind of gives mappers and people plenty of options. And so if you're a good artist, like say, like, I'm just going to throw it out there, like Bal, right? He's a professional. So, you know, he's a professional 3D artist. So he's got...
I've said this before, that he's more like a game engine that happens to run Quake by happenstance, really, and shouldn't be a good benchmark for Quake stuff.
Right. In other words, if you're judging content on Dark Places, you're just not really, it's not a really fair comparison, because it's the other engines out there that are based on FitzQuake, which are Quake Spasm, for people that don't know, Quake Spasm, Mark V, etc. Those things are much closer to the original experience. And I've always been, and I've searched for this, maybe you can find this for me, OTP. Carmack talked about resolution really being the key way back when. So if you have a high enough resolution, those 8-bit textures look fantastic if you have the right type of filtering. And I've always looked for that quote, because I always want to post it when we have these conversations. Like, it looks terrible. It's like, no, it doesn't. It looks the way they dreamt that it could look eventually.
Right.
Going from, you know, VGA on up to what we have now. And he was right, because it does scale. It scales. It looks lovely, you know. So there's...
I've never heard that quote, actually, but... Even if you look for something like Arcane Dimensions in Google, you get all these 4K screenshots and they look amazing as they do.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of resolution or like the content, like you said.
Correct. And like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
No. Sometimes I think you're finished and you're not. So please.
No, I was finished this time.
Well, that leads me to Arcane Dimensions, because... you know, it's supremely popular. I think it's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons that Quake has a little bit of steam, so to speak, over the last few years, because of the press coverage it got and got mainstream stuff. And but it's funny, you said something about Arcane Dimensions, like, because I think, if I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I think you have like a love hate with it, or there's you like it up to a certain point or something, and you can elaborate on that. But the one thing you said something recently that cracked me up, and I realized, and you've basically ruined Arcane Dimensions for me, is that when you gib a monster, it looks like a bunch of red tissue paper just like pops up. And it's so true, because I've been messing with the code for gibs and things recently. And I just love, you cannot improve on the Quake 1 gibs, you know, the way the physics work, and just it's randomized and everything. And now, so again, you've ruined Arcane Dimensions for me. Every time I gib a monster, it's just like, tisk tisk.
Well, to put that in context, it was Shambler, not me.
Oh, it was? I'm sorry. Quake.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We're okay. Talking about the big cloudy effect that happens when you kill somebody, so... It happens in ID when you run the Quake Spasm Spike engine, but what you said is also right. Like, I like the maps in Arcane Dimensions because they are pieces of art, but I don't really like the mode itself for whatever it changes. Like, it was the case with Remake Quake in 2012. It is the case with AD in 2019, in my opinion. Like, it tries to improve in Quake on ways that don't need to be improved, in my opinion. Like they said with this thing with Gips, like Gips, sorry. Cancel that, it's Gips.
It's both.
Okay, no.
Potato, potato.
Okay, so basically, if you keep just shooting at a monster with a nail gun long enough, it's gonna gip like it's nothing, and it's gonna just make a generic squishy sound like whatever. So,
no. So, I think that's a strange thing that I think some of the community members actually say, where they say that a mod will come out or an engine will come out. It's like, well, this isn't needed, you know, and it's an interesting take, because really nothing we do is really needed, you know, nothing, none of these levels, none of these mods, anything. It's more preference, in my opinion.
It is, but you know, again, the way I see gibbing in Quake is like, it was already good because it happened relatively late and not often, because you either have to get a quad damage or a very strong weapon, so it had to be kind of a special event. And when you got this AD, when everything gips, when you actually sneeze at it, it kind of, you know, takes the fun away, in my opinion. So
I think to be
experimentation is always welcome, but you know, the way I'm trying to say is like, sometimes it feels like people actually don't really appreciate Quake for what it is. Like, considering even a couple of years ago, you would come across comments on Punk Missile about how, well, I like the map, but you know, actually got modded because I find the Quake gameplay just really boring and stuff. It's been done 20 years ago. And actually, it's so mind-boggling to me how people could actually say this. Like, we got all these new mappers and people coming up with new ways to use the old stuff, you know. So when people say that the Quake gameplay is old and tired and they go on to make mods for Quake, it's like it is immediately gives me this red light, like, what are you going to change about it and what I'm going to dislike about it? And one of the funny things is that the 3D Realms lead designer Killpixel was very distinctly one of them saying that Quake gameplay didn't age very well. So let's see how your gameplay works out, dude.
Well, hopefully,
yeah, that is interesting.
Put their money where their mouth is. You know, I think it goes back to variety is the spice of life. It's a simple, you know, sentiment. But you know, you do get tired of things. You want to, you know, there's a lot of aspects to it. You want to create things. Like, we're in this community because we like to create, whether it be videos, content, what have you, maps. So it's always fun to kind of imagine what you can do, but it's also one of those things. It's not going to be to everybody's taste. Like, I think overall, even from a mapping perspective, Arcane Dimensions is really great, but it's also, I tend to focus my work in the community on new people. So I can't just throw someone into AD. They've got to kind of approach it themselves, because there really is so much power under the hood, as I say, for Arcane Dimensions. And, you know, it could be a lot worse. And I will say, just to be fair to the gang, you know, Sock and everybody who works on Arcane Dimensions,
yeah,
code, to be fair, they do give a lot of options. So you can disable footsteps, you can disable the projectile based thing. So I appreciate that. And that's that's something I admire. So I don't want to be too down on AD, but it was a little bit more of a funny thing. But I do think it's been a net positive for the community. And so that
absolutely,
right there.
Yeah,
and same with Quake 1.5. I think as a mod, it's really fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's not to replace Quake. We already had this conversation before with Bloodshot. But hey, more Quake is good, right? Make more Quake is my motto.
Well, the way I say it is like, nobody's saying, don't do this, you shouldn't do this. It's just that people obviously are going to have preferences, and you get like people like me who are really sticking by the old stuff. So
Now, wait a minute. I just thought of something. You did a map, which is actually a really cool map, because I played it recently. And I don't recall the jam. I don't remember. You'll have to tell me. But it has black fog. And a certain appendage all over the map. So you're going to have to explain yourself. <Uh-oh>. it has peni everywhere.
Oh no.
Well, that was actually the very first map jam ever, like jam 1 2014, the way I described it.
Okay, so it was jam 1. Okay.
Yeah, so it was basically this feeling of everybody get around, we're making a map in 3 weeks. And it was my first time mapping, basically. Not the first time mapping, I've tried to map before. It was my first time with Trench Broom, actually. So I was taking a big of a break, because I used to do some mapping in 2012 and stuff, but never came to fruition. So this map jam was this excuse to come off of the woodwork and do something. And I tried to make this, like, the theme was the CZG's theme, Honey. So I wanted to make similar, like this huge walkways around big, like, void stuff and lots of fog, and basically this kind of this big tribute to whatever CZG achieved. And basically I ran out of time and basically bit a lot more than I could chew. So I was like posting on the thread a couple days before the deadline. So guys, I don't think I'm gonna make it, so count my memo out. So, and I actually think it was Lunaran who said something like this. Well, you know, a map is just an unfinished map. Is that a picture of you under the shower? Just pack it up and release. I was like, yeah, okay, you just want to look at this, so whatever. I just got a bit annoyed at that comment, because the map was really not even close to finished, so I decided to kind of passive-aggressively patch it up with all these brushes made of a certain texture. Yeah.
Where did that come from? Where did that texture come from?
That actually from Fan, because it was included with his DM7 remix. For some reason,
okay.
It was inside the map. So if you open DM7 inside the program text, you can see the special texture right inside it. So I had the word loaded at the time because of how many copper stuff it had, so I was using it extensively in that map. So I decided I'm just going to use some placeholder texture and fill it up. Scrolling through the texture, see, okay, this is perfect. I'm going to use this.
it was memorable. That's for sure. That's the only, I think that's the only Jam 1 map I remember, ironically. So
somebody funny. Actually said it was their favorite map, which was really a surprise because to me it's actually total shit. Like,
It has some nice moments. It definitely has some nice moments in it. But yeah.
You don't need to be
like there's the part with the penis in it. Great moment. You also got to be careful saying, you know, biting off more than you could chew when this is involved. So I wanted to point that out.
Perfect. Well, so I want to ask about two other.
Okay, so, well, after that, I tried to think of some other maps for some other jams, but it didn't happen until 2017 with the Egypt jam. So it took me some time to actually, you know, make a map that wasn't full of terrible appendages. That is the human ones.
Well, your map for DM4 jam was really fantastic. Out of a huge pack. I know I played yours twice because it was one of those things where it was beautiful and challenging, and I went back to play it again, and it really stands up. It's a really cool map, and again, out of a pack of amazing maps. So, you know, your releases are few and far between, but you have a solid body of work. You did this one speed map, and it was called "Happy in the Haze of a Drunken Hour." You want to talk about that one a little bit?
Oh yeah. It was a funny thing because I don't really know where I got the idea or something, but I know there was a special hack, like you could make an entity that directly affects the player's settings, like the Tivers or something. And I decided at some point that if the famous wizard, so that basically the E1 and 3 grimy setting, like this big thing, and a couple days before, it was Mark Wamp who posted this picture of a wine cellar from Paris or something. I decided I need to get this in a map. So somehow I decided I'm going to get conflate these ideas because I didn't have anything else to do. So I decided to make this big wine cellar map and decided maybe I can do this thing where the player actually touches this trigger and it actually sets this kind of this setting like... It's called idle scale or something, I don't remember, but when you are looking at the intermission screen, the screen is wobbling a bit, you know? So that's the thing that controls it, and I decided to set it to 36 to emulate this kind of drunk effect. And I think it caught everybody by surprise. Like, I remember Skaki just touching the trigger. I wanted to make a bit more robust, like, I wanted to make this, like, big bottle of wine that was rotating, but I couldn't have enough time to make another hack for that. So I just settled for a big pink question mark inside of a big cellar. So once you touch that, they get 200 health, which is important for the rest of the map. And they instantly get a drunk effect, and the player just goes like, whoa, that's this text trick that says that's like that. They instantly get drunk when then doing that. So. And then I decided that with this kind of handicap, I could do something more interesting than a normal map. So I decided that how many monsters can I put? Like, how few as possible can I make this so the map is still challenging? So I decided to put one shambler at spawn. So you have to battle a shambler with Cardi on the cover while still, you know, battling this terrible affliction, you know? So I also decided to put a knight on the front, like a kind of this foreshadowing, like, was tilted off axis by 45 degrees and gave me some extra HP so you can actually, as you should, you can actually notice that it's wobbling around the place. So also this foreshadowed, this knight was really drunk by guarding the cellar from the player. And when it came to the end, I said, what should I do for the boss fight? And my instant thought was to make a big cafon battle, which was a spectacularly successful idea for big of a troll move it was, like, since your health has almost certainly gone down by the point, and you have to evade his fireballs while trying to shoot four really little buttons to activate a lift and run away. You don't actually kill him, which is also a bit of a...
Under the influence. It's very memorable, and it's a must play. And what I would like to talk to, I'd like to reach out to every speed mapper out there, and I want to see how fast you can complete that map. that would be an amazing speed map just to watch.
I think somebody actually managed to get a rocket jump over a couple of fireballs, so it was kind of amazing to see. They ended them up with 2 HP, but they lived.
Well, let's talk about Quake Text.
Oh,
are we revealing too much?
I don't think so. It used to be a secret, but it's probably obvious by now.
Sorry.
Could I talk about it, like explain it a bit more or something?
Sure, yeah. Drive people to the feed, because it is pretty bizarre.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's kind of like this. In 2016, it was Kaki who actually started an account for what he said was funny Quake Talk, and he named Quake Type TXT. Like, it was named after Doom TXT, which did the same purpose for like the Doom community at large. And there was a lot of stuff to be posted, so like a lot of really weird takes on Quake and stuff. So basically, everything that was posted on like Reddit, on even 4chan, it ended up there. So basically, all the complaining like, Quake was brown, he would just post every one by one to mock everybody. But sometime around the last year, he decided to quit. So he handed over me the password. And since then, I'm in charge of the account. So I'm also doing all the same things and also doing a bit of a shifting, because while all the text was funny to me, like it wasn't all that popular, but once we start doing like stupid memes with Quake, it was instantly become a lot popular, more and more popular. So when Skaki had given me the password, it was at 100 followers more or less. Now it's at like 1,500 of people following like dumb images. So
I haven't seen it in a while, so I'm cracking up. That's one of the that's one of the reasons I'm laughing like an idiot back here. But I didn't know Skaki started it. That's great.
For a long time, and people were wondering who's actually running this new OTP. No, it's not me. At the time, it was true.
That's great. Well, it is funny. If you're an Uber fan for Quake, it's definitely you have to subscribe to this feed.
That's true. But also the funniest ones are the ones that I would make. Like a couple of days ago, actually it was 2 months ago. It was somebody actually made a GIF, like a big map hack. There was this Quake guy watching Funk message board in a game on a chair, and he's just spinning really fast in his chair.
Yeah,
that was actually somebody else who made it. Maybe they can do it themselves, maybe not.
Yeah, who is it? Tell us who it is one day. Come somebody cop up, own up to this thing.
Basically, it's also related to what I kind of, do. Maybe not do professionally because I'm still a student, 27, it's a bit embarrassing, but all this kind of media communication stuff is basically the kind of thing I want to be doing in the future. So running a Twitter account is kind of maybe a little bit of practice towards that. But it's not going to be look on kind of resume like, oh, look, I just posted memes for 2 years or something. But, it is kind of more adjacent to what I'm interested in the community, because mapping is really fun, but, I don't love it the way Skaki does or Ions do or something else, because so I'm trying to contribute in some other ways, and this is one of the things I do.
Right. Well, everybody contributes in their own way, and, I'm really glad that I'm scrolling through these, and it's just it's dark.
Some
it's
of these terrible. I apologize.
I love... now, the urinating ogre, I believe, is from Mad Fox, correct? That's really funny.
The caption actually really comes from the caption actually comes from Ken, who decided put urinating in quotes because of certain movement that does around the testicles. So, in Ken's opinion, he's not urinating at all.
Well, it's voluminous, that's for sure. Whatever it is, it's voluminous. So everybody, we're talking about at quake underscore dot TXT.
So maybe next time you think twice about before swimming in the Quake map,
It's just one of those situations where you see it and you're like, I love this community, I hate this community.
Right, exactly. It's disturbing, but so addicting.
So funny.
It's also Kratos pooping ogre, of course. That was also a popular one.
Right. Yeah, that's a classic. I'm telling you, that needs to be in the next Arcane Dimensions release.
So OTP, you said that you had a good story about being scared of Quake from when you were younger.
Oh yeah, like I told you, I was about 9 when I started playing it, or I watched others play it. And it was, there wasn't actually, if I told you what was scary about it, I couldn't really tell you because it was the general vibe of this kind of eyeless monster just skulking in the dark. And one of the scariest memories I have is playing Ifrit M2, the episode 3 map. When you approach the silver key, it just like quickly descends and locks, so it was, where did it go? And I went to sleep that day just thinking about that key. Jesus, where could it possibly go? Just made me think about it, so I couldn't sleep about it for some reason. Like, this whole vibe of this hostile, cold universe just made me really get me the creeps when I was 9.
Yeah. No, I can understand. I was talking about this recently when I was playing through the first 2 Doom episodes. That game scared the crap out of me for some odd reason when I was a kid.
Actually, there is still one area in Quake that actually scares me. It's E4M4. Is this map, this terracotta map by Sandy Peterson, and this one area that looks like kind of a dungeon. It's extremely dark, you can almost see nothing. So all you just see is this almost pitch dark before of you, and as you hit the crack, it was standing flying by, and it was really terrifying to me also then, like this kind of completely evil area. Like basically, E4 is really scary for me. Like basically, like when you look at the first 3 episodes, that was okay, cool, and action, like cool, you get to shoot zombies with grenades and stuff. But episode 4 is actually really creepy to me still.
Yeah.
And you got all these things like it inverts your expectations. Like not like Ryan Johnson, but you know, you have this water you fall through. You got these like cracks coming out of the windows, which is, you know, kind of feel like the nightmare you had about Quake, so that's what kind of what you're playing. So I think I can really agree with you that Quake can definitely be still scary, and I don't think there's anybody scared by anything in it now, but this is some potential, and that's kind of the potential I would like to explore, maybe in some mod or some episode, maybe some in the future, maybe even this year. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the atmosphere and the theme of Quake and Doom and whatnot both really lend themselves easily over to something that could be horror-based. I think that would be cool. But I also read here that you are a big Spawn lover as well. Can you please explain that?
Well, I don't know where to start because, well, I think they can be the best enemy when used right, which happens actually more often than it used to be, than it used to, that it is this big tool to induce panic in a player when you give the player the ability to take it out quick. It just becomes a matter of finding it. When you hear the gargle noise that it does, can't even reproduce it, it's just so gross. And basically it's just a matter of everything becomes low priority, you just need to kill this one monster before it gets you. And that's actually one of the things that actually works very well. Like, you have this big, kind of this big terrifying about to a warehouse map, and you will actually enter this huge room and he will spawn somewhere. So even though attacked by like 20 shambles at once, you have to just go and find the spawn immediately, because otherwise you will be in a hell of a trouble instead. Mm-hmm. So it used to kill people a lot when people were playing on the keyboard, because they couldn't actually dodge fast enough from it. So, well, whether it's good design or not, the jury is still out. Some people disagree on that, but it can be used to amazing effect, and it's just basically, it's kind of like, I don't know if Doom has any kind of anything like this, because even you got the most annoying, like the Revenant, the Archivist, that kind of thing, you know, people actually like them, but if you mentor the tar baby, you address the spawn, they're gonna say, I hated this guy so much, so.
Well, and it's also, too, in these games, you know,
it's also important, you know. If you get the player to hate your map, it's still better than them actually they thought nothing of it. So as long as at least it's actually an emotion about of the map, so...
Right. And to me, it's comic relief. It's kind of comic relief, too. I mean, you know, it's all kind of... Quake is just outrageous anyway. But it's not meant to be. I mean, it's meant to... Yeah, so it is good to have a good laugh.
I don't know about that because considering how much fun they had, well, until some point at id Software when they were making it, like there was an interview with Wired when you had Romero just shooting fireballs at the Jesus mural, just take this, you bastard, you know. So that's obviously some good camaraderie at the time in it. So I think some of it was definitely reflected in the multiplayer, because you know Gibbon is also hilarious in multiplayer, you know, just shoot somebody's explode into these big chunks. Mm-hmm. So that's also kind of where speedrunning comes from, like this idea that it's Quake can be great when you take it seriously, but it's also good when you don't necessarily do it, like when you take a bit of a funny approach, like you decide to actually have some fun with it, it can also yield great effects.
I agree.
Like, yeah, for completely. Example, my last speed map was the Doom Texture speed map, which RC actually had to go mod through recently. I'm very sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. Evil. You're evil. Your map was evil, yeah. By the way. I couldn't finish it. I couldn't finish it. So I need to go back and play it.
Taking Quake too seriously, I completely agree. Because, I mean, even in the original game, they put in the dope fish, you know? So it's like, you know, they knew that that's they were going to put in a few little silly things here and there. So I will say, though, that the spawn itself, I attribute that because the rest of the game it's pretty well balanced. You know, there's something, you know, a weapon for every enemy, and all the enemies are pretty varied and everything. But when you get to the spawn, it really does feel like an enemy that like some, you know, primitive, you know, Unity developer created. They're like, this is the main enemy of the game. And like, what the hell? Like, no one really designed this thing. They just created this weird enemy that bumps around all over the place. It's crazy. It does make me laugh when they show up, but man, when they're overused, I can't stand it.
Well, you know, everything has its own use, you know. Like, when you play I think the most famous use of spawn in Quake is the E4M6, the big pit of spawns. That one is actually, I don't know. You actually have time in advance to deal with it, but I think the big like wall that pushes you back towards the pit, I think it goes a bit too fast. So people actually just fall in and they die several times. So I think that's maybe not the best use of a spawn, but they can be used to some really good effect too.
Especially in a very tight corridor in a secret where you have no way out. It's perfect.
Well, I had this map. It was speed map 185. It was this kind of 2024 map. And sometime in the middle of it, I decided that, I could actually take this a bit of a challenge. I'd actually use every monster only once and see how far could I get with it. So I only had the one Grunt, one Enforcer, one Shambler, one Spawn. And I think the spawn placement in that map is actually what I'm really the happiest about, because you press a button and I leave the stands, and actually it activates before you actually can see it. So you have to be really quick with reacting to it. So it's a bit more dynamic than other spawn combats, but actually just shooting in the face before it does anything. So I'm kind of happy with my use of spawns over time, actually. People shouldn't
use actually to use them. And that's something. So that's something you don't hear every day in normal everyday conversation. I'm really happy with my use of spawns. there's one other subject that we do need to get to, because we talked about this months ago. Dicey dungeons, just really quickly, because I know RC will be very interested in this game, or at least I'm suspecting he might be interested in this game.
Ooh, oh yeah, well have? Basically it's... I don't really have an active role in it so far, but it is this indie game by Terry Cavanaugh, the VVVVV guy and Super Hexagon guy. He just made this game about dice in a dungeon. It's hilarious, it's amazing, it's wonderful. It's coming out sometime very soon, hopefully. And I've been playing it for a long time, like almost the entire year, because he's been taking a kind of this open design process for it. Like, he released open betas for it, and he actually welcomed feedback a lot, so you can actually see the evolution of it from this like stereotypical indie jam game, like all this kind of like basically programmer art, to actually this kind of beautiful animated art and actually amazing music. And it's actually, you should get it before it's actually released, before the price will double, which is acceptable, but you know, get it now, get it while it's still hot, get it while it's still fresh. It's a really good game to play. I recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, I didn't realize he had done those other games, and he's fantastic.
Well, basically, Dumptrack asked me if I wanted to plug anything from me. I said, can I plug this guy's game instead, even though I didn't make it? That's just how good it is.
Well, we'll take your word for it. And it does look...
Because so people can actually find it faster or something.
Of course, yeah. And there's a Steam page, and it's on itch.io as well. So
it's on itch.io. It will be on Steam about, I can't tell you when. But sooner than later, probably. The latest version just came on Tuesday, and it's really just kind of... It's really difficult for me to stay focusing on my speed mob when this game is available to others.
Well, I'm not surprised it's a good game, because it's the same guy who did Super Hexagon and VVVVVVVVV. Both are very, very cool little games.
Well, the guy is great at what he does.
Yes, definitely.
I have yet to talk about him, but maybe making a Quake map, but I'm kind of interested what he would do about it.
Well, it's the year of the mod, so you'd have to do a mod.
Could be. It's been the year of the mod like 2 years now. Let's see how it
goes. I know. Exactly.
You heard it, everybody. Confirmed. Mod confirmed.
I think it was
Dicey Dungeon mod.
January last year, like, people were saying, it's the year of the mod. Make us a mod. And nobody made a mod.
Right, exactly. I think it's changed this year, though. We got a lot of action going on. There's a lot of stuff going on Quake mapping on the Discord. So it's encouraging. Well, it's very encouraging.
The modding jam was great, even though I still haven't played it, but it was amazing, you know, just way to get people actually moving with Quake C and stuff. Obviously, I think Crocus Dump also helped a bit in this regard. And, I have some plans for my own episode on QC, what I hope to come to fruition really soon. Well, maybe not really soon, because it's going to take some time, but now people are really opening up to the idea of modifying the game. So again, it's going to be another this aspect of what belongs in the game and what is kind of this more experimentation. And, you know, but eventually you're going to get to a point where Quake actually is firing at full cylinders, where actually there's all these kind of enhancements and everything is good. It goes like it's complete harmony and going to be amazing. It's going to be a great time. I am actually really excited about how Quake is going to this with kind of couple years.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dumptruck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dumptruck_DS.